This program has been pre-recorded.
From the heartland of America comes a harvest of insight and entertainment. This is the Common Sense Coalition, the Derry Brownfield Show, starring Derry Brownfield. And here's the star of the show, now the man who says a balanced diet is a cookie in each hand, Derry Brownfield.
Hello there, Derry Brownfield here, and I am happy that you're along on this adventure in broadcasting. It is the talk show with a country flavor and some common sense points of view. Today is that day, Thanksgiving Day. And I'll tell you what, most of our listeners are going to have more than one cookie in each hand. It won't be a balanced diet today, but we're going to have a lot of fun talking about Thanksgiving Day anyhow. This is the day, of course, that the Pilgrims came over here and gave thanks to the Indians. Is that right? I have Bill Federer with me today. Bill, what really brought on the Pilgrims, and why did they get over here in the first place? I mean, they risked their lives. They risked everything. I wouldn't want to get on one of those little rickety old boats and rely on the wind to get me all the way over here to Plymouth Rock.
Well, it's interesting, Derry, when you go back and see the history of why the Pilgrims came over in the first place. And the situation was in Europe, it was all Catholic until the Reformation happened, and then different countries would choose other different denominations. And in England, Henry VIII was married to Catherine of Aragon. She was the daughter of King Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain. They're the ones that sent Columbus to America. Anyway, after 18 years, Catherine didn't have a son, so Henry decides to divorce her. The Pope said, no, I'm not going to recognize the divorce, so Henry decides to be his own Pope and started the Church of England and put himself on as the head. He went on to have six wives, and their fates were divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. So Henry VIII was not a really nice guy to be married to. Well, his advisors suggested...
Unless you were the last wife.
Yeah, survived, yeah. And his advisors suggested that if he really wanted to break with Rome, he should stop using the Latin Bible and get himself an English Bible. So he spread the English Bible around the country, but something unexpected happened. People began to read it and began to compare what was in this Bible to this king divorcing and beheading his wives and him being over the church. And so this group wanted to purify the Church of England, so they were nicknamed the Puritans. Well, the king didn't think he needed any purifying, thank you, so he persecuted them. And he hired an Anglican archbishop by the name of William Laud, L-A-U-D. And Laud sent spies into all the churches to make sure they were following the official Anglican liturgy. And if they weren't, the pastor was arrested. Laud composed a list of all the leaders in England and put an O or a P by their name. O for Orthodox and P for Puritan. And the Puritans lost their jobs. They were purged from academia. Matter of fact, Laud arrested an Oxford professor by the name of Alexander Layton and ordered him to have his nose cut in half, his ears cut off, branded on the face as a heretic, and whipped twice and put in the Tower of London until he died. I mean, so this was some serious persecution going on against those that disagreed with the Anglican Church. Well, there was another group that said matter of fact, William Penn got expelled from Oxford for having a Bible study in his dorm room rather than going to the Anglican chapel service. And so there was another group that said, the Church of England is beyond hope of trying to purify. We're going to separate ourselves. And they did. They would meet in secret and in barns and basements by candlelight, sort of like the illegal house churches in China. And, you know, one group of the separatists sold their houses and lands, got passage on a ship to take them to Holland. Right before they took off, the captain robbed them and turned them over to the authorities, and they were put in prison. Another group of these separatists sold their houses and lands, made arrangements with another Dutch captain, and while the men were ferrying out their supplies and stowing them on the ship, the British came over the hill and captured the women and children. So the Dutch captain lifts his anchor and says, we're out of here. And the wife and the children are like, husbands, get back here. Well, they passed those women and children from one court in England to another for 3 years. Finally, a judge says, you really didn't do anything wrong. Go home. And they said, well, we can't go home. We sold our homes. So more or less to get rid of them as a nuisance, they put them on a ship, sent them over to Holland, and they were reunited with their husbands. And so these separatists did not like the state government controlling the church government. They wanted a wall of separation. They wanted a separation of the state from the church. They didn't like the king sending spies into their churches and arresting the pastors. And so these separatists were in Holland. for 12 years. They had to work three and four different jobs apiece. They began to see their children assimilating into the Dutch culture, joining the Dutch military, learning the Dutch language and the looser morals that the Dutch had. You see, the Dutch basically had a combination of seven different kingdoms to form their Dutch Commonwealth. And these kingdoms sort of had to tolerate each other. And so that gave this freedom for religious toleration, but also it was freedom for looser morals. And so the separatists decided that they weren't getting any more people coming over from England, and their kids were assimilating into the Dutch culture. They were going to be a one-generation movement. And then when Spain threatened to attack Holland, they decided to flee again. So they were going to go to Guyana in South America. The weather was warm and so forth, but somebody brought up that it was so close to where Spain was, the Spanish Main. That was the area of the Caribbean controlled by Spain. They called it the Spanish Main. And they heard the horror stories of how the French Protestants, called Huguenots, not astronauts, they were Huguenots, they settled in Florida in 1565 in Fort Caroline, which is around Jacksonville, Florida today. Well, the Spanish found out about it, and they sent Menendez up there with a bunch of soldiers, and they captured them and cut off the heads of 300 men on the banks of the St. John's River and took the women and children captive. And so this horror story filtered across Europe that these separatists decided they didn't want to go anywhere near where Spain was. So they decided to go to Jamestown, which was more or less a business venture colony. In my book of the original 13, I've read through all the charters of all the colonies. And you see the Virginia Charter, it has page after page of stockholders. These were investors into this company that was going to go and find some profit, you know.
Now, were they European stockholders?
Right, in England. And so this was the colony of Virginia. Now, these separatists decided that they were going to come and join this Virginia colony, but they basically got delayed in their taking off, and so that caused them to settle further north. But we'll get into that after the break.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Common Sense Coalition. We're visiting today with Bill Federer, and it is Thanksgiving Day, and we have a lot to be thankful for. Stay tuned.
This is the Derry Brownfield Show.
Find out why the makers of VF Weight Loss are giving away a free bottle of their popular weight loss product to anyone who calls right now. If you're on a diet, about to start a diet, or you just need to lose some weight, then join the thousands who've called to get their free bottle of VF Weight Loss absolutely free. That's right, we're so confident that VF Weight Loss will help you lose weight that we'll let you have a full bottle for free.
My name is Denise, and I need to lose 100 pounds.
This is Dave. I need to take off about 30 pounds.
The worst part of any diet is feeling hungry. But now with VF Weight Loss, you can feel full during those difficult times when cravings strike. VF Weight Loss will help you conquer cravings and finally lose the weight fast and easy. Best of all, call now and get one full bottle for free. Please limit one per household.
Call 1-888-456-2183. That's 1-888-456-2183 to find out how to get your free bottle. Call 1-888-456-2183. Again, 1-888-456-2183.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare with your children being raised by someone else? With our free information, you can lead a less stressful life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was about to be laid off from a company that was going bankrupt. On top of that, I wanted my kids to have mommy care, not daycare. My first month, I made $1,000 part-time. After 90 days, I was home with my children. And for the past 7 years, I've been here for my three little girls. I love this business.
Go to freedom14.com. Get out of the rat race and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I was skeptical. However, I had to get out of corporate America. Both me and my wife were able to quit our jobs and now make over $10,000 a month from home.
Go to freedom14.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 14.com. Freedom14.com and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Wendell Fleshman will be holding a special calf and yearling sale this coming Monday, November the 26th, at the Milan, Missouri Livestock Auction. Early consignments include two pot loads of fancy Angus, 8-weight steers. They've had all their shots MFA processed. Holston Farms have consigned these cattle, and Hines Farms will be in with 125 head, fancy black and black Baldy calves weighing from 4 to 550 pounds. They also have had two rounds of shots. Sam Buswell has consigned 100 head of fancy black and black Baldies, weighing from 3 to 450 pounds. Laura Reynolds will be in with 75 crossbred calves, and Dee Riddle is also selling 75 fancy Charley crossbred calves. Now, most of these offerings have been preconditioned. Johnny Reardon offering is a 5-weight Angus calves have been white tagged and weaned. Now, these are just a few of the early consignments for the special calf and yearling sale that's coming up this coming Monday, November the 26th at the Milan, Missouri Livestock Auction.
And we have returned. It is the day of Thanksgiving, and we have with us today Bill Federer. Bill, you were describing to us why the pilgrims came here in the first place.
Well, they came here because they were persecuted in England.
As Christians.
As Christians. They didn't like the fact that the King of England was the head of the Anglican Church, and he persecuted people who didn't agree with him. And so these separatists decided to flee to America, and they were going to be under the Jamestown colony. It's sort of interesting. They had two ships at first, the Mayflower and the Speedwell. But the Speedwell didn't speed well. It began leaking. Twice they took off, and twice they had to go back because the Speedwell was leaking. They finally abandoned it and had to combine everything onto the Mayflower. But they wasted a whole month of time doing this, eating up their supplies that they were saving for the New World. And now they were sailing later in the year.
It was going to get cold on them.
Cold, and the storms in the North Atlantic were violent. So they began to take off, and the storms were so bad that they were confined to the between deck, a four-foot-high space, 102 pilgrims crammed in there for over 2 months. I mean, people throwing up, there's no bathrooms. I mean, they had to start to go in the pots. I mean, babies crying. One person died. One baby was born. One of the pilgrims got so tired of the stench, he went topside just as a freezing wave was sweeping the deck. He wanted to get fresh air. Well, he was thrown overboard. His arm caught a rope. They pulled him in. He was blue, but he survived. His name was John Howland, and his descendants include Humphrey Bogart, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Franklin Roosevelt, and George W. Bush. Anyway, so this is the young guy that was knocked overboard, but he was pulled back. Well, the main beam cracked that was holding up the main mast, and they had a screw, either a printer's screw or something used to put beams into place, but they were able to put it back. Long story short, they were not able to land in the Virginia colony because of the storm. I mean, the storms were so bad at one point they even took the sails down and they just let their boat be tossed in the weather because they couldn't fight it. And so they landed at Cape Cod. And this is where the story gets interesting. Number one, they didn't have a government to get off the boat and submit to. And so rather than just getting off the boat and no man having a government, they decided to create their own. And so they created the Mayflower Compact, which was the first government document ever written in the New World. It starts off, "In ye name of God, amen, we be hereby undersigned, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith, a voyage to plant the first colony on the northern parts of Virginia." Then they say this, "In ye presence of God, we mutually covenant ourselves together to form a civil body politic. And we agree to submit ourselves to the laws that are passed." So in other words, it wasn't the king granting a charter like they did for the other colonies. This was them granting themselves permission to start a government and then agreeing to submit to it. This was the blueprint for the Connecticut and eventually the U.S. Constitution.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
the Derry Brownfield Show.
Welcome to the History of Your Money with Craig R. Smith. It's time to learn from history to prepare for the future. Here's Craig.
The history of your money today focuses in on a $20 gold piece and a $20 bill. If you go back to the early 1900s, a $20 bill and a $20 gold piece worked exactly the same in our economy. You could go down to a local men's shop and buy a beautiful three-piece suit with either a $20 bill or a $20 gold piece. Now let's accelerate ahead in history 83 years later. You walk into a men's shop with a $20 gold piece and a $20 bill, and what happens? Well, with a $20 paper bill, you'd be lucky to find a nice tie for $20. But a $20 gold piece, even in the worst condition, is worth $350. Still ample enough money to buy a nice three-piece suit. Did the $20 paper bill maintain buying power, or did the $20 gold piece maintain buying power? And if you look at America, we have had historical precedent to show that gold will always outperform its paper counterpart. Do you want to have all your money in paper, or should you have a little of your money in real money? Let's learn from history to better prepare our families and our finances for the future.
Thanks, Craig. If you're interested in learning more about America's fascinating history of money, call toll-free 1-800-289-2646. You can receive a free information kit valued at $29.95 from Swiss America, explaining why tangible assets like gold are the buy of a generation. That's 1-800-289-2646, and get your free educational kit, a $29.95 value, online at SwissAmerica.com. And be sure to tune in tomorrow for another edition of The History of Your Money with Craig R. Smith.
And we have returned. I'm visiting today with Bill Federer. It is Thanksgiving Day, and we're talking about Thanksgiving and the pilgrims that came here. And, Bill, you know, it's such a shame that our schools do not teach the history lesson that you just gave us. It's amazing. And, you know, you go to the public school system today, and they're going to be talking about how the pilgrims gave thanks to the Indians for helping them out, how the pilgrims came over here to make money. They don't ever mention the fact that the facts that you gave us about how they had to come over here because of religious beliefs, and they were going to get killed if they stayed where they were. They have totally rewritten the history books, and our poor little dumb kids don't know any better.
Well, you know, I wrote a book called Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion, and on the back cover I asked the question, how did America go from pilgrims coming over here seeking the freedom to express their Judeo-Christian beliefs to today's intolerance against those very same beliefs? I mean, how did we get from there to here? It's a disconnect here. We're suing to take the Ten Commandments down and getting God out of our pledge. But anyway, the pilgrims did come over for that. And it's interesting that their Mayflower Compact, they decided that since they were not in Virginia, they could not submit to the Virginia government, they would come up with their own government and then voluntarily submit themselves to it. Now, where did they learn how to do this? Well, they learned it from their church. You see, when they fled from England and went to Holland, their pastor was John Robinson. And he taught them that they were a body and a congregational form of government. Whenever they had decisions to make, they would all fast and pray, and then they would vote. And each had an equal vote. And so when they came to America and they couldn't have a government in Virginia to submit to because they were blown off course to Massachusetts, they decided, what are we going to do? They said, I know, we'll pray and we'll fast and then we'll vote on how to set up our government and how to choose the governor and so forth. So the Mayflower's government was based on the church government that the pilgrims had. And that became the blueprint for the Connecticut Constitution, where Thomas Hooker was a congregational pastor. And he said, look, we're equal before God, therefore we're equal before the law, therefore everybody in church gets a vote to vote on that pastor, you know, who their pastor is going to be, and everybody should have a vote as to vote for their elected leaders in their government. And so basically, that was the blueprint for the U.S. Constitution, where it's we the people. You know, I read through all the charters of all the colonies in my book, The Original 13, and the colony of Virginia was granted by King James I. It starts off, King James I, defender of the faith, you know, grants the charter for Virginia. Queen Elizabeth granted the charter for, you know, the Roanoke colony, Sir Walter Raleigh. King Charles I granted the charter for Maryland. King Charles II granted the charter for Pennsylvania. King George I granted the charter for Georgia. The Mayflower Compact was the pilgrims granting themselves permission to start a government. There was no king that says, okay, you can. And that's the idea that America was, we voluntarily committed our own government under God, and we submitted ourselves to it. Anyway, the pilgrims got off the boat, and they began to look for a place to start building. They finally.
What time of the year was that, by the way? Do you know what date it was?
Yeah, they left in August, and they arrived November 12th. That's when they signed the Mayflower Compact. And it was not until December, almost Christmas time, that they finally found an area to begin to build their first settlement, and called Plymouth. And so the men would get off the boat, they would begin chopping wood and building their buildings, and they would sweat. And the sweat would turn into a cold. The cold would turn into a pneumonia, and then they would die. One died, two, three, four, five, a dozen, two dozen, three dozen. Between January and March of 1621, half of the pilgrims died. The next spring, only five couples retained their original spouses. They would patch together the families where the widows would marry the widowers. And anyway, at one point, they were so sick, only two of the pilgrims were healthy enough to stand. And they would nurse the other ones and wash their clothes and their bed sheets and, I mean, all this. And but they would bury them at nighttime because they didn't know if there were any Indians around. They didn't want them to know how weak they were. And so it was a very difficult time. Well, that next spring, the pilgrims probably would not have survived another winter. But into their camp walks an Indian that speaks to them in broken English. You see, what happened is the English, French, and Dutch would fish along the eastern seaboard of America. And every now and then they would lure Indians on board and teach them their language. Sometimes they would take them captive.
I was going to say they kidnapped them, didn't they?
They would kidnap them, yeah, and take many of them to Spain. The big slave trading port in Spain was Malaga. Well, there was another Indian that came into their camp by the name of Squanto. And this is where the story gets very interesting. I mean, here are these pilgrims. Half of them died. They couldn't have survived another year. And Squanto comes into their camp speaking to them in perfect English. You think, perfect English? Where did he learn this? Well, lo and behold, about 6 or 8 years earlier, Squanto had been one of those Indians that was kidnapped, and he was taken to Malaga, Spain, sold as a slave. Tradition has it he was purchased by some monks, and then he was given his freedom, and then he hitchhiked his way across Europe back to London, where he worked for 3 years for a merchant. Then he got somebody to drop him off in Newfoundland, where he fished with a company, and then he finally was dropped off back at Cape Cod just 6 months before the pilgrims landed, only to find out that his whole tribe had died.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Common Sense Coalition, and we're visiting on this Thanksgiving Day with Bill Federer. Stay tuned.
This is the Derry Brownfield Show.
Now, most of my listeners know G.B. Oliver. He's executive director of the Paragon Foundation. But what is a paragon? One listener recently called me on the air and read the definition for the word paragon out of Webster's dictionary. This is what he said.
It says, model or pattern of superior excellence or perfection, compared to, equal to. Folks, I'll tell you one thing about Paragon Foundation that I found out. They do the work on a dime. They take the 9 cents change and invest it. If you go down to Alamogordo, New Mexico, and you'll find out they don't have a big fancy building down on White Sands Boulevard. These folks are ranchers. They're good people. They wear jeans and boots and They got a smile on their face, and they got faith. And they're good folks, I'll tell you what. I'm a member of the Paragon Foundation, and I highly recommend them.
So what are you waiting for? Join the Paragon Foundation today. Just call toll-free 1-877-847-3443. That's 1-877-847-3443. Or go online to paragonfoundation.org.
Located in rural Missouri is a place called Heartland, a modern-day city of refuge where men, women, and children can come and find hope in the various recovery programs offered by Pastor Charles Sharp and members of Heartland Community Church. The Heartland community includes Heartland Children and Youth Homes, Heartland Recovery Programs for adults, K-12 Heartland Christian Academy, Nations Harvest Bible College, and several businesses, including one of the largest dairy operations in the country. Every home, business, classroom, and job site at Heartland are filled with people who are reaching out with compassion of Jesus Christ to help those who are hurting. Heartland came into being as a result of prayer, and prayer continues to be the source of Heartland's daily harvest of miracles. Heartland is a true haven of spiritual healing. To learn more about Heartland, call 660-284-6212. That's 660-284-6212.
Wendell Fleshman will be holding a special calf and yearling sale this coming Monday, November the 26th, at the Milan, Missouri Livestock Auction. Early consignments include 2 pot loads of fancy Angus, 8 weight steers. They've had all their shots MFA processed. Holston Farms have consigned these cattle, and Hines Farms will be in with 125 head. Fancy black and black Baldy calves weighing from 4 to 550 pounds. They also have had 2 rounds of shots. Sam Buswell has consigned 100 head of fancy black and black Baldies weighing from 3 to 450 pounds. Laura Reynolds will be in with 75 crossbred calves. And Dee Riddle is also selling 75 fancy Charley crossbred calves. Now, most of these offerings have been preconditioned. Johnny Reardon offering is a 5-weight Angus calves have been white tagged and weaned. Now, these are just a few of the early consignments for the special calf and yearling sale that's coming up this coming Monday, November the 26th, at the Milan, Missouri Livestock Auction.
This is the Jerry Brownfield Show, and here's the star of the show. Now, the man who says, man will occasionally stumble over the truth, but most of the time he'll pick himself up and continue on. Jerry Brownfield.
And we have returned on this Thanksgiving Day, visiting with Bill Federer, talking about the Pilgrims and how this very first Thanksgiving got started here in this country. You were telling the story about Squanto when we stopped for the commercial break, Bill. How did William Bradford describe Squanto?
Well, into their camp walks this Indian by the name of Squanto that speaks to them in perfect English. Now, can you imagine this? They, over 2 months' journey, they were across the seas. Half their group dies. They're so far away from England. And out of the woods walks this Indian that speaks to them in perfect English. He goes, oh, yeah, I used to live in London. Oh, yeah, I used to, you know, the pub down on Wharf Street, you know, St. Paul's Cathedral. Oh, yeah, and I remember over in that neighborhood. I mean, imagine the dismay on these pilgrims to find in the wilderness this Indian that had lived in London but could speak to them in perfect English. But he also knew that area like the back of his hand because he grew up there. And it's interesting. William Bradford writes that 3 years before the pilgrims landed, a French ship was shipwrecked right at Cape Cod, and the sailors got ashore, and he writes that the Indians never left watching them and dogging them till they got the advantage and killed them all but 3 or 4, whom they sent from one sachem to another, making sport with them and using them worse than slaves. And you think, well, why didn't the pilgrims meet that fate? Well, a plague swept through that area and killed that entire tribe. And probably was a European disease that the Indians did not have immunity for. But nevertheless, the plague was so terrible that the other tribes refused to come onto that land. They thought some great spirit had wiped everybody out.
It may have.
And and so, but Squanto at this time was still working in London, and he was only dropped off just 6 months before the pilgrims landed. Squanto finally gets back home, is looking forward to coming back to his family, only to find they're all dead. So dejected and depressed, he goes and lives with another tribe. Well, that spring, I can just imagine the scene. Somebody comes into his teepee and says, hey, Squant, you wouldn't believe it. There's a bunch of English people trying to start a colony on your old stomping ground. And so Squanto comes there, and he finds a purpose for life. I mean, here he sees them. They're so inept, they couldn't survive. So he teaches them, and William Bradford writes this. He says, after their 66-day journey, he says, then appeared Squanto, a native of these parts, one of the few survivors of the plague. He was carried away with others by one Hunt, a captain of a ship who intended to sell them for slaves in Spain. But he got away for England and was received by a merchant in London, later employed in Newfoundland, and lastly brought to these parts by a Captain Dermer. Squanto stayed with them and was their interpreter. He showed them how to plant corn, where to take fish and other commodities, and guided them to unknown places, nor was there a man among them who had ever seen a beaver skin until instructed by Squanto. It says Squanto was a special instrument sent of God for their good beyond their expectation. And he tells them how to go down to the banks and fish. And they said, oh, we tried fishing. He says, oh, no, the salmon are going to be spawning. You're going to be harvesting fish. Get ready. He taught them how to plant corn. They go, oh, we tried. We can't. He goes, oh, no, what you do is you put the corn seed in and put a couple dead fish on top and then cover it with dirt and then guard it for 2 weeks to keep the wild animals away. And then the fish will decompose and fertilize the soil and the corn will grow. And then he taught them how to take the corn and stick it in a pot and shake it over a fire and make popcorn. But the very important thing of the beaver skins, it took them 40 years worth of beaver skins to pay off the debt for their boat ride. You know, whenever we see the pictures of the pilgrims of the Mayflower, we never ask ourselves the question, who's paying for this boat ride? They borrowed money from Thomas Weston, who was an adventurer. That's what they called investors back then. And Thomas Weston changed their interest rates a dozen different times. You know, was exorbitant.
He made a good Federal Reserve chairman, wasn't he?
Yeah. And but it took him 40 years worth of beaver skins to pay off their debt to those people. But most importantly, Squanto was their interpreter with the other Indians and put them on good terms. So that the pilgrims never had the Indian problems that Jamestown had, you know, John Smith and Pocahontas and all that. And so Squanto was able to arrange it. So they came to the first Thanksgiving. Then the Indians came and they brought wild deer and turkey. And then the pilgrims had their puddings and so forth and things that they had grown. And the first Thanksgiving went on for 3 days. And at the end of the first day, the Indians just rolled up in their bear blankets and slept on the ground, and the next day they were still there. And so then the next day they roll up in their bear blankets and then woke up as they were still there. And so, but it started off the colony on a very good, peaceful relationship with Massasoit. He was the chief. And of course, Massasoit was where we get the word Massachusetts. And that's why
I can never pronounce. Everybody makes fun of me when I try to say that word.
Massachusetts. Yeah. And so the Indians were that whole entire first generation had very good relationship with Massasoit and William Bradford, who was the governor of the Plymouth colony. And but they had to thank. But it's interesting. They did thank God. And that's one of the most important things. The pilgrims always thanked God. Matter of fact, right after the Thanksgiving, another shipload of pilgrims arrive. But this new shipload did not have any supplies with them. And so the supplies that the pilgrims had saved for their winter, they had to split in half with these new pilgrims that came over. And at one point, they got down to 5 kernels of corn a day. I mean, they rationed out such a little amount.
You can't eat your seed corn either.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have some to plant next spring.
Right. And so they were in a very difficult situation. So the next spring, the charter that they had gotten from the investors was basically communism. It said that the land shall be owned by the company and that everybody will work 6 days on this land, and then they were supposed to take a percentage and send it back to England to pay off these investors, right? Well, nobody wanted to work. I mean, they had people dying and sick. And so William Bradford said, scrap this communism. Everybody gets their own plot of land, and whatever grows on it, you get to keep. And so there was an abundant harvest. You had whether you were sick or the moms with the baby on their hip, they were out there digging and planting. And that next year they had a great harvest, so they had another Thanksgiving. And so this started the tradition that carries on till today. And one of the things I think is interesting is what happened to Squanto. And William Bradford writes that in the end of the year in 1622, they were exploring another part of the bay, and he writes, winds drove their boat in, and they could not get around the shoals of Cape Cod. So they put into Manamoic Bay. And he writes, here Squanto fell ill of Indian fever, bleeding much at the nose, which the Indians take for a symptom of death. He bequeathed several of his belongings to his English friends, and then he begged the governor to pray for him, that he might go to the Englishman's God in heaven. I thought, isn't this interesting? That here's Squanto, he's around these pilgrims who are there witnessing their Christian faith, and Squanto's last request was he begged Governor Bradford to pray for him that he might go to the Englishman's God in heaven. And so he basically converted to the Christian faith. And, of course, you read the secular history books today, and they won't tell you that.
No, they don't. They absolutely, like I said a moment ago, they have our school textbooks, they have completely rewritten them.
Yeah, I've actually seen a textbook where it has the Mayflower Compact, and it says, having undertaken ... a voyage to plant the first colony on the northern parts of Virginia. I thought, well, what did they leave out with the ... And I have it in my America's God and Country book. But it says, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith, a voyage to plant the first colony on the northern parts of Virginia. So they just happened to take out the references to Christian faith from these public school textbooks.
It was a coincidence that they didn't intend to do that, I'm sure.
And, but anyway, so the situation in America was that these pilgrims began to have their colony, and for 9 years they were the only colony in America other than Jamestown. Well, back in England, those Puritans that were trying to purify the Church of England with the king as the head,
right.
It wasn't getting any better for them, and so they decided if that little group of pilgrims, about 300 of them, if they could survive in the new land, that the Puritans could too.
Wonder how they knew that. You know, they didn't get on the internet and say, "Hey, we made it." You know, with an email. Wonder how they could keep up with each other.
Well, it was about a 3-month turnaround between sending a letter
right.
over and sending a letter back, and they did correspond, and the pilgrims did continue to have, you know, somebody go back over to England and bring back cows. You know, and Edward Winslow brought the first cattle to the Pilgrim plantation. And
Now, wasn't there cattle already, and we're changing the subject here a little bit, but wasn't there cattle and horses already in South America and in Mexico?
The Spaniards brought
yeah,
them over
sure.
a century earlier. And before they would cross a river, out of sort of tradition, the Spaniards would leave a male and a female cow, and then they would cross the river. And as they did that, river after river after river, these wild ones breeding,
right,
of course, that's recap with the longhorn sheep
yeah.
and longhorn
cattle.
Let's
take a break. We're going to do that. This we'll be right back. You're listening to the Common Sense Coalition.
This program has been pre-recorded.
This is the Derry Brownfield Show. The Common Sense Chronicle is Derry's monthly newsletter. A yearly subscription is $24.95. To order the Common Sense Chronicle, send check, cash, or money order to Newsletter, P.O. Box 79, Centertown, Missouri, 65023. What things will you find in the Common Sense Chronicle?
Well, there's watersheds and Minutemen, property lines and Jack McLam, vigilantes protecting our borders, endangered species restricted corridors. Save the tadpoles, the greenies cry, while they're spraying something in the sky. No hunting and fishing on this here land till the DNR pulls back its hand. You in water, you in air, you in everything, it just ain't square. PETA kills both dogs and cats, but wants to protect all the gnats. Kemosabe is a friendly word. Now it's hate speech? That's absurd. Global this, global that. It's all hogwash, that's a fact. What I want to know is, hey, Derry, where'd you get that hat?
The Journal of the American Medical Association has confirmed that consuming B6 and folic acid significantly lowers the risk of heart attack or death due to heart disease. These proven nutrients, combined with the key ingredient trimethylglycine, makes Cardio-1 the most complete formula for optimal cardiovascular health. White willow bark, known as the natural aspirin, further strengthens this revolutionary product, Cardio One. A healthy heart needs these proven nutrients, and they're found in Cardio One, chelation therapy made easy. Chelation has been compared to a roto-rooter in the cardiovascular system. It removes plaque and returns the arterial system to a smooth, healthy state. Removing arterial plaque from your body may help reduce your risk of heart attack by as much as 85% and improve overall health. To order a 30-day supply of Cardio One, send $43.95 to Cardio One, P.O. Box 79, Centertown, Missouri, 65023.
What are you giving for Christmas gifts this year? Well, I'm giving my friends a customized pocket knife from 3B Silversmiths, and they'll make a custom gift for you, too. Robert Asher is a professional silversmith, and he's real easy to work with. He produces beautiful handcrafted pieces. As a matter of fact, I had him make silver handcrafted belt buckles for my special friends last year, and they were beautiful. Call Robert at 3B Silversmiths to get him working on any kind of customized piece you can imagine. He does belt buckles of all kinds, badges, pocket knives, money clips, and more. But his specialty is Western-style jewelry, like bracelets, earrings, pendants, mini buckles, bolos, pins, tie tacks, you name it, he can produce it. And if you call now, you can get it done before Christmas. Custom designed and hand engraved. Call 3B Silversmiths, toll free, 1-800-448-8558. That's 1-800-448-8558 or online at 3bsilversmiths.com.
And we have returned. Bill, we've been talking about the first Thanksgiving. But actually, we can go all the way back to George Washington. I think he was the first president. I'm pretty sure he was. I wasn't there. I didn't get to vote for him. But he declared that it's the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey his will, to be grateful for his benefits, and humbly to implore its protection and favor. And he was following the request of Congress. Congress had already gone along with this, see? Mm-hmm. They didn't have any Muslims in Congress back in those days. Which asked him to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer. And by the way, he didn't mention Indians and he didn't mention pilgrims.
Well, you know, back then they had this idea that when things were bad, you would declare days of prayer.
You know, even way on up, I don't remember which president it was. I think about the time of Lincoln, it could have been Lincoln. They even believed in fasting.
Right, right.
They'd have a day, a national day of fasting and prayer.
As a matter of fact, when you read through, and I read through all the public papers of the presidents. I put them in my book, Treasury of Presidential Quotations. And when things were bad, they would declare days of prayer. When things were real bad, they would declare days of fasting and prayer. And then when things turned around, they would declare days of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
There was one case when the colonial era, when they declared a day of fasting because they were having a famine, and a ship of supplies comes over the horizon, and they changed it from the day of fasting to a day of Thanksgiving. And so it was this idea where they had a relationship with God, which shows that they were not deists. Because a deist believes that God created the laws of nature and left, and there wasn't any purpose of praying because, you know, so they were all firm Christian believers. And for example, one in 1746, the French built an armada of ships.
French armada, yeah.
And they were planning on coming and burning every settlement on the English New England coast from Canada down to Georgia. And the people in America heard about it, and they declared days of prayer and days of fasting. Well, a hurricane came and hit the French fleet and totally scattered it and smashed it to splinters. And it ended up, what was left of it turned back, and the French captain fell on his sword, you know. And I mean, so they declared a day of Thanksgiving. And then during the colonial era, 3 months before they signed the Declaration of Independence, the same Continental Congress declared a day of fasting and prayer. I mean, the same men that signed the Declaration unanimously declared a day of fasting to Almighty God. And then we have when the First Amendment was written, and George Washington is the president, he gives the first national day of Thanksgiving. And he says, whereas both houses of Congress has requested the president to declare Day of Thanksgiving, I therefore declare it so forth. But I mean, here, the same week they declare the First Amendment, he declares a Day of Thanksgiving. So obviously they didn't think the First Amendment was to keep the government from thanking Almighty God.
Let's take another break. By the way, this is the final break of the hour. We'll be back. You're listening to the Common Sense Coalition on this Thanksgiving Day.
This is the Derry Brownfield Show.
Well, friends, I've been there, done that, had a great time, and you will too. The best-kept secret of the Ozarks is Wildwood Springs Lodge in Steelville, Missouri. Over the years, the lodge has hosted hundreds of family reunions, and they'll host yours also. The best time to go is when you say it is. The best time to call is right now. Family reunions require a little advanced planning, and right now is the best time to get your preferred date at the lodge. The lodge provides all the meals with your room, and for you, that means no cooking or cleaning, and there's plenty to do. S'mores by the campfire, a pool with a view, canoeing on the Merrimack, or simply relaxing. Your aunts and uncles and cousins by the dozens will thank you for taking them to the best-kept secret of the Ozarks, Wildwood Springs Lodge in Steelville, Missouri. Make reservations today by calling 573-775-2400. That's 573-775-2400. Or go online to wildwoodspringslodge.com.
SwissAmerica.com reports gold rose above $800 an ounce Wednesday as a diving dollar catapulted oil near $100 a barrel. Gold closed in New York up $7.20 to $797.70 an ounce. Analysts said that while drivers for gold were looking positive, a further correction from this month's rapid run to 28-year highs at $845 an ounce could not be ruled out, with speculators still holding the strings. More at SwissAmerica.com. $800 gold should be telling you many things. First, inflation is 2 to 3 times higher than reported. Second, the Fed will sacrifice the dollar to fight a recession. Third, gold prices, having already tripled since 2001, must nearly triple again to exceed their 1980 high. Swiss America has compressed 25 years into a 25-minute Gold 101 DVD kit that's free. Call 800-BUY-COIN. That's 800-289-2646.
Bill Federer is with me today. It is Thanksgiving Day. Bill, you've been talking about the Thanksgivings that we started out with, why the pilgrims came in the first place and their first Thanksgiving, and then from then on. Let's wind this up and discuss the different kinds of Thanksgiving we've had from the very beginning until the year 2006.
Well, now, the different presidents would declare days of Thanksgiving and days of prayer and days of fasting as they felt needed. So in 1799, during a threatened war with France, John Adams declares a day of fasting and prayer to Almighty God. Then during the War of 1812, James Madison declares a day of prayer when the British attack. Then the British burn the White House, and Madison declares a day of fasting and prayer. We're getting serious now, you know. And then when we finally win the war, Madison declares a day of thanksgiving to God. And it's interesting, Madison was the one who introduced the First Amendment in Congress. And here, when it's his turn to be president, he has 3 national proclamations acknowledging Almighty God. So certainly he didn't think his First Amendment was to keep God out. No, it was simply to keep the federal government from establishing one Christian denomination as the national denomination. You know, that War of 1812, the British burnt the White House August 25th, 1814. And then a historian writes that the sky grew black and the winds came and they knocked over chimneys and hail and lightning began falling on the British soldiers and walls would fall. And even one account of British cannons being lifted up by tornadoes and thrown yards away. and the British scattered in confusion, and then the rains from these storms put out the fires. And a British historian said, more British died by this stroke of nature than all the arms the Americans could muster in the feeble defense of their capital. And so another one of these providential things. And then we have, you know, Zachary Taylor, during a cholera epidemic that we finally came through, he declared a day of thanksgiving to God. We had Abraham Lincoln, during the Civil War, issued the first annual National Day of Thanksgiving. So instead of it being sporadic as needed, then it became an annual event. So every president from Lincoln until now has had a day of thanksgiving to God proclaimed. And I've read through all of them, and I have excerpts of all of them in the book Treasury of Presidential Quotations. And you have, for example, you know, Grover Cleveland declaring a day of thanksgiving. You have William McKinley declaring a day of thanksgiving after we win the battle in Cuba.
When did they set the date?
The date was always, this is very interesting, it was always the last Thursday in November. But during, in 1939, Franklin Roosevelt noticed that shopping started the weekend after Thanksgiving. And so he thought if he could change the week of Thanksgiving and make it a week earlier, there would be an extra week of shopping and more money would be spent and it would help kickstart.
Do you know, believe it or not, I can remember that. I remember my mother and her friends, oh, they got mad. I was born in 32. I was 7 years old. I'd been in the second grade, or third maybe. I think I was maybe in the third grade when all that happened. And boy, I can remember the people, particularly my mother and her cronies. They were who's a president to think that he can change the day of Thanksgiving?
Yeah, yeah, and they actually called his Franksgiving.
So I don't remember that.
So the third week was called, and then some states would choose Franklin's the third, and then the Democrats would choose Franklin's third Thursday, and the Republican states chose the fourth Thursday. So you had blue states and red states dividing up.
Now, I don't remember that.
And then some states like Texas decided to declare both Thursdays, so they had two Thanksgivings, so it caused confusion because in East where the states were close together, and then finally in 1941. Out of the campaign issue, he changed it back to the fourth Thursday. Just a week later is when Pearl Harbor was bombed. But it's always been a part of our American history, and just wish you, Derry, and all the listeners a happy Thanksgiving this year.
Okay, Bill, it's been a pleasure again having you as a guest on the show, particularly on a holiday, Thanksgiving Day. And now it's time for me to say, may the good Lord bless and keep you while the near are far away. May the goods you wish for others shine on you today. May your heart stay tuned to music that will cheer the hearts of men. May the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet again.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails. Smiling until then.
Who cares about the clouds that we're